Sabes bien que soy hombre de campo y que solo tengo un descapotable. Cuando llegue el próximo domingo, voy tráelo para impresionarte. Tengo un tractor amarillo, que es lo que se lleva ahora. Tengo un tractor amarillo, porque es la última moda. Hay que comprar un tractor, ya lo decía mi madre.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. I'm speaking with Stephen Hill, who is a writer, columnist, and political professional. He's the former director of the Political Reform Program at the New America Foundation, and his books include 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy, Fixing Elections, The Failure of America's Winner-Take-All Politics, and Whose Vote Counts. His latest book is Europe's Promise, Why the European Way is the Best Hope for an Insecure Age. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Hill.
My pleasure to be here.
And you are in Barcelona, Spain, attending a conference of European leaders, and clearly in the context of concerns about Greek debt, where the government, 28 billion in euros, was just held up pending a vote of confidence with the government in order for the economic reform, you know, based upon the needs for austerity, in order to get an extra loan to pay off earlier loans from the EU and the IMF. And things in Spain, of course, are difficult in terms of the unemployment amongst the young. And there's some sort of encampments in the city, which we can talk about, in Barcelona. But let's begin with a general overview. What's the attitude amongst European leaders at this conference you're attending in terms of the idea that Greece could drag down the eurozone?
Well, I've been in Spain for about 2 weeks, and before that in Madrid and other parts of Spain, and interviewing a lot of people, both, you know, political leaders, think tank types, and people in the street. And, you know, there's really, I mean, contrary to what you're reading in the headlines, especially in the U.S., there's really little sense of panic here. There's little sense that things are falling apart the way, I mean, I saw some headlines recently on some websites and newspapers, and you know, from the New York Times to Truth Out and others, and it really is kind of interesting how the reportage is quite jarring, and yet it seems to not match the reality that I'm seeing here. The European leaders at this conference are understandably concerned, but at this point, it's not a new story. You know, it's this crisis, as it's called, has been going on for well over a year, and it's pretty clear that the policy that they've decided to do is not that different than what the banks, the Western banks and American banks, decided to do with Latin American debt in the 1980s, and that is to kick the can down the road, give the banks a chance to clean up their balance sheets to some degree as they prepare at some point in the future to write off some of this debt, because it's pretty clear that the Greek government, as well as possibly the Irish government, for example, and Ireland in some ways it's too bad this situation has been tied to the Greek situation and not to a country like Ireland, because in Greece you really do have real problems with, for example, the previous government, not the current government, but the previous government that hid the debt that Greece actually had. Greece is also a country that really is, in many ways, a country of tax cheats, everywhere, you know, from the local small businesses on up to major corporations. And that lack of transparency and the moral hazard of the Greek situation makes it difficult to just simply bail out Greece without having that problem recur again until Greece fixes some of these other problems. Whereas a country like Ireland really didn't have any public debt until they had to bail out their banks. And so the situations are quite different in each country, and I see the European leaders as taking a fairly measured approach as they sort of step by step slowly step into figuring out how to deal with this situation.
Well, Stephen Hill, the money that the European Union, the IMF, keep giving to the Greek government, I think we get the wrong picture over here. That money is not necessarily going to the Greek people or even the government. It's going to bondholders, isn't it? And that's where Angela Merkel has stepped up, I think, amongst the European leadership and questioned the idea of all of this taxpayer money from Europe going to bail out the bondholders. And maybe they should share some of the risk.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, it's simply the case that any government, whether it's Greek, which is a rather small economy, and, you know, the European Union, it wouldn't take that much to bail out Greece, but in the American government as well, that when you have a debt, it's a loan, and it's money you owe to someone. And those people that owe it, you know, at a certain point, you have to turn that those previous bonds around, and you have to buy new bonds to keep financing your debt. You know, any government has a choice of not going into debt, but if you don't do some degree of deficit spending in order to, I mean, you have good debt and bad debt. Good debt, you take that money and you invest it in things like education, infrastructure, and other things, research and development, technology that help your economy going forward. Bad debt is when you waste it on money like corruption, you know, tax cheats in the case of Greece. But in the case of America, you're wasting it on things like a bloated military budget where that money really doesn't do much good, and yet it's used as a fiscal stimulus to our economy. We waste money also on our health care system where Americans are paying twice as much money for their health care on average than they're paying for it in Greece. And in Greece, even in the middle of this crisis, in Spain too, and same in Ireland and Portugal, everyone there still has health care. Whereas in America, you have, what, 45, 50 million people without health care, and even the people that have it are paying way more money for that health care, and all the metrics show that the health care is not as good as it is in a place like Spain. So I would just say that people should look beyond the headlines that we're seeing. In many ways, the headlines and the media coverage, of course, President Company accepted yourself and KPFK and others, those headlines are being driven by the business media and the financial press, and, you know, even the mainstream media like New York Times and others are driven by these the values of the financial markets. And so they're creating all this stir of emergency and crisis and over this debt situation, whereas for the, you know, for the average person in the street, I would say that it's probably no worse, and in some case it's better in Greece than it is for many Californians who don't have health care, have lost their homes, lost their jobs, and these sorts of things.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephen Hill, author of Europe's Promise, Why the European Way is the Best Hope for an Insecure Age. He's in Barcelona at a conference of European leaders, and we're discussing the Greek debt crisis and its possible ramifications for the rest of Europe. And just to touch on Spain, where you spent, obviously you spent some time in Greece as well, but you're in Spain now. And one of the things that I understand is going on in Barcelona, there's an encampment of the young protesting economic conditions. They call themselves the Indignants. And is this a generational thing? Because in Spain, unemployment between 16 and 24-year-olds is apparently up to 43%. In Italy, it's about 25%. So is this a lost generation?
No, not necessarily, because they count unemployment differently than we do in the United States. In Spain, I'm not sure about Italy, but also in Greece, if you're only partially employed, your count is unemployed. Whereas in the U.S., if you're partially employed, you're counted as fully employed. And so there is a methodology difference there. But nevertheless, you know, the protests here, and there was just in Barcelona yesterday, it was a huge protest. I've seen reports of it may have been up to 100,000 people that participated. And when I was in Madrid last week, I went down to the Plaza del Sol, which is the main plaza where the encampment was going on, and I interviewed and talked to some of the younger people there. And, you know, these are people who are very sharp, some good organizers there. I mean, in the U.S. media, this kind of protest is, again, it's portrayed as a sign that things are falling apart. I take a different view of it. I view it as a healthy sign that people are taking the initiative. They're getting out there and saying, we've got to come up with a solution for how does a modern economy develop itself, getting beyond a development model that was the U.S. Washington consensus development model in the post-World War II era, where economies were developed through asset bubbles that eventually pop and create enormous destruction around hyper-consumerism that, consumerism drives about 70% of the U.S. economy. And yet, the more consumerism you have, the more carbon you belch into the atmosphere. And so there's a conflict there between, having our societies being environmentally sustainable, but also being economically sustainable. And then also, how do you develop your economy without having the government going into massive amounts of debt. These are the real challenges that we all face. And I see, I mean, when you talk to the young people, of course, they don't necessarily have a fully developed analysis along these lines. I mean, they're not policy experts by any means, but they have a fairly sharp sense of things aren't working the way they are. You know, there's a lot of unemployment here. We've got to do better. And so I give them great credit for mobilizing and focusing the attention of the nation. Everyone who I've talked to at all levels here pretty much support the young people doing these protests. Even the government, the people in the Socialist Party and the think tanks associated with them say, you know, on the whole, this is a good thing. But, you know, a lot of these young people, if you were to talk to them about their political views, they tend to be more center-left, and yet they're not supporting the Socialist Party because the Socialist Party has been the reigning government here and has had to take some really harsh measures in order to rein in their government debt. So it's a very complicated situation, and I sometimes wonder, where are the protests in America? Where are the young people or people of any age out there protesting the fact that, you know, we now have over 9% unemployment? A country like Germany only has about 6.2% unemployment because they pursued specific policies that have lowered unemployment, whereas in America we've refused to pursue those same or similar policies. Why aren't people protesting the fact that, you know, 2.5 million Americans at this point have lost their homes? Millions more have lost their jobs, and because of the American system where you get your health care through your job, they've lost their health care at the same time. And so, you know, I sort of think we need to look in the mirror and not so much look at Europe and say, what's wrong there? Things are falling apart, and think about how can we get things going again in America?
Well, indeed, the political debate in this country is all about how, in order to deal with this supposed deficit crisis, we have to eviscerate what little social programs we have. And, you know, the Republicans are all running on repealing health care. And if you, as you're pointing out there in Europe, Stephen Hill, in spite of the problems in Greece and Spain and Ireland and Portugal, the standard of living is high and people are secure about their standard of living and health care being a part of that. But getting back to this vice that the young people must feel that they're in, and he's in camp, which you're talking about, and the same is happening in Greece, where the kids are saying, why is our future being curtailed and why are we being asked to lower our sights and to go through this austerity because of the profligate borrowing of governments? And all the money that the IMF and the EU are funneling, again, is not going to the people of Greece or Spain. It's going to the bondholders.
Exactly right, and that is a real dilemma because you have this debt. The debt is to the bondholders. If you don't pay off the debt, the bondholders aren't going to loan you any more money. And so it's sort of this vicious circle, you know, the dog chasing its tail with a tin can on it. There's no easy out to that situation, especially if you're a country like Greece, where in addition to that, you are a country of tax cheats and a government that hit its debt, so you've lost trust with the bonds markets and even with your fellow European nations that are expected, that you're hoping will bail you out to some degree. So these are the young people who are protesting are vocalizing a genuine feeling of dissatisfaction with the current situation, but yet there's really no easy out at this point because, if a government today were to say, okay, we're not paying our debtors off, our debts off, we're not going to pay back those who we owe this debt to, at that point, the debt doesn't go away. At that point, you might have private investors who pull out of your country and jobs start disappearing. You have people that start pulling money out of your banks because they're worried that they're not going to get, you know, maybe you're going to close the banks and you're going to hang on to their deposits, and so you get a run on the banks. I mean, any way you choose, in a sense, there are all sorts of ramifications to that choice. And so in some ways I see the young people in the squares and the encampments that are going on as vocalizing a genuine outcry of the public, like, how do we get into this situation? We've got to do better. The question is, what policies do you pursue going forward? There's policies you need in order to stabilize the current situation, but there's also policies you need looking to the future. So, for example, we now know that the financial institutions, the banks and others, have become gambling casinos. So how do you enact what I'll call social banking, returning banking to its original purpose, a vital purpose of loaning money to businesses, to homeowners, to communities, in order to use the power of the multiplier effect and other things that you have in economics in order to grow your economy? How do we get back to those sorts of days and get away from the gambling casino that banking has become? You have to untangle about 15 or 20 years of policy, including policy that was passed by the Clinton administration, Robert Rubin, Larry Summers, and Larry Summers, unfortunately, was one of Barack Obama's closest economic advisors up until just last year. This is the question that has to be figured out going forward and that has not been figured out at this point.
Well, it's interesting times, I guess, revolutionary times. That's what these kids in these encampments in Athens, I suppose also where you are in Spain, talking about revolution and in many ways being inspired by the Arab Spring uprisings. So
yes, at the conferences here, there were several, quite a few speakers from the Mediterranean Arab countries, and you definitely see more of the European leaders trying to solidify those connections that were already there but making them stronger with the leaders of the Arab Spring. So I think that's a very positive development. There are some positive developments going on here.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Stephen Hill.
It's been my great pleasure, Ian. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Hill, who's the author of Europe's Promise, Why the European Way is the Best Hope for an Insecure Age. And he spoke with us from Barcelona, Spain, where he's attending a conference of European leaders. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I would like to thank my producers Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. Our production intern is Graham Fitzgibbon. Our theme music is by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I'm also writing a daily blog. You can go to ianmasters.com and check that out. You may leave comments, and I'll love to know what you think. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.